disclaimer.
You must not rely on information on our website or broadcast it as an alternative to medical advice from your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. If you have any specific questions about any medical matter, you should consult your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. If you think you may be suffering from any medical condition, you should seek immediate medical attention. You should never delay seeking medical advice, disregard medical advice, or discontinue medical treatment because of the information on our website or that which has been broadcasted by us.
Disclaimer.
Welcome, dear friends, to Inside Health. My name is Elham Fakhri, and we will have a very interesting discussion today on depression and mental well-being. We have a special guest today as well, who will be joining us shortly. But prior to that, I'd like to discuss a couple of medical news which has been out there that I'd like to share with the listeners. One is specifically about gene therapy, which has established and slightly improved cystic fibrosis in some of 136 patients in a trial. This news was published in BBC Health, so their lungs showed no decline on average after they inhaled healthy copies of the gene that causes cystic fibrosis once a month for a year. Results published in a Lancet Respiratory Medicine showed this particular article. And lungs most clogged before the trial showed a 3% improvement. The lungs of patients that did not take the gene therapy showed a decline of 3 to 4% on average over the same period. Professor Eric Alton of Imperial College London, who led the trial, warned the effect is the most and it's variable. It is not ready to go straight into the clinic yet. He also mentioned that him and his colleagues at the UK Cystic Fibrosis Gene Therapy Consortium, which includes scientists at Edinburgh and Oxford universities as well as Imperial, are hoping to have a further trial next year. Cystic fibrosis is an inherited condition caused by a faulty gene that leads to a buildup of sticky mucus, causing debilitating infections in the nose, throat, and the lungs. And patients' average life expectancy is 41 years. So as you can imagine, having this gene therapy, which has been out there for quite some time, trying to alter the genetic material in terms of treating a disease. Finally, there has been some results for cystic fibrosis. Now, Professor Stuart Alborn of Queen's University in Belfast said results were encouraging, but the therapy had been no more effective than some of the drugs which are already available. He called for more small-scale tests to see if a larger dose would be more effective. And he also mentioned that if he was on the board of a pharmaceutical company, he would require further studies to determine the best dose and whether the current treatment could be combined with other drugs to increase the effects, he said. It is too soon to proceed, obviously, with larger phase 3 trials, which would cost many millions. Cystic Fibrosis Trust Chief Executive Ed Owen said that the advantage of gene therapy is that it attacks the basic defects of cystic fibrosis, and that has the potential to reduce the daily routine of drugs that those with cystic fibrosis endure each day, and perhaps offers a long-term improvement to transform their lives. Now, on other news, there has been a recent article in BBC Health which states that cancer immunotherapy has been approved in the UK. A pioneering cancer drug that harnesses the power of the immune system has been approved for use in the UK. Nivolumab was one of the drugs labeled milestone therapy at a major cancer conference last month. It has been approved for lung cancer through the UK's Early Access to Medicine scheme and has been given an EU license for melanoma. The drug has been shown to stop skin and lung cancers from progressing in clinical trials. The immune system is basically a powerful defense against infection. However, there are many breaks built in to stop the system attacking its own tissues. Cancer, which is a corrupted version of the healthy tissue, can take advantage of these breaks to evade assault from the immune system. So nivolumab takes the breaks off. One trial of nivolumab alongside an already approved medicine, ipilimumab, stopped melanoma advancing from nearly a year in 58% of the patients. A separate trial in lung cancer showed the drug more than doubled survival times in some patients. The treatment has now been allowed in the UK for both skin and lung cancers. And Jill Nuttall from Melanoma UK said there has been an alarming rise in the number of cases of melanoma in the UK over the recent years. And today's news is therefore very welcome as it provides more options for patients and the potential of better, longer survival. Those are two news articles that I want to share with the listeners, and I hope you found it informative. Now, we'll take a short break, followed by introduction to our guest, who will be joining us to the show, and we'll be discussing about the main topics of today would be depression and mental well-being, and we'll discuss a little bit about how and why we have depression and how where we can find help from as well. So we'll take a short break and listen to this lovely song, and we'll be right back. Dear friends, welcome back to Inside Health. We have our guest today who traveled a little bit far to join us here today. So we have Omid Said John, who's the London Health Ambassador. And welcome to the show, Omid John.
Thank you so much, Ilham John. It's a pleasure to be here. As in you introduced me, I'm the current London Health Ambassador. We deliver a lot of workshop for mental health and mental well-being to vulnerable population of our community. I'm also helping out UNICEF UK as a children champion. We do a lot of work with UK officials to influence the pre-millennium development agenda for the next 15 years to have a pure goals for children rights and the child trafficking, and to improve more pre-education across the globe. I'm also the chairperson of the University of Hertfordshire Model United Nations, where it's an educational platform where people can learn about diplomacy, international relationship, and about the UN policies and procedures.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that sounds great. You're involved in a lot of different things, which is absolutely brilliant to hear. So may I just ask, how did you get involved in all these different projects? Because it's not one, it's not two, it's like three, four different projects that you're into at the moment. How did you manage to get involved in all of these, and what was the passion driving you to be participant in these projects?
We should bear in mind that I'm doing my undergraduate as well. I just finished my second year doing drug design pharmacology. But it's just I feel the responsibility to give back to the community, and it always gives me that pleasant moments when I help out other people. So it's great to be involved in community work and community service.
That sounds absolutely brilliant, and I do agree with you. We do need to give something back to the community when we are working ourselves. Just briefly tell me about your degree. You said you finished your second year, so tell me about how was the first 2 years, and how did you manage your second year exams, and are you happy now that they're over?
Oh yeah, definitely. I just finished my second year exams about a couple of weeks ago. Compared to first year, second year was tougher. We all know, the students will probably know. I'm looking forward to third year. I have an interesting project to work on. I'm working on dengue virus. Currently, I'm working with a PhD student who's working on influenza virus. So it's going to be a great summer, and then followed by my third year project. So looking forward to that.
That sounds brilliant. Can you just briefly tell our listeners that what is your first year modules involved, and what the second year modules involved, and what was the major difference? Would you say that the second year was tougher than the first year?
Well, with first year, when you finish your A-levels, first year is basically recapping the whole process, the basics of science. It can be anything from biology to mathematics, the basics, cell biology, basics, chemicals, and especially for my degree, we have a lot of chemistry involved. So it was all of the basic chemistry, as well as with the academic stuff. We do a lot of how to get ready for professional life after degree. So there are a lot of modules that can help you build that extra curriculum activities. My second year was more focused, I would say. It was slightly advanced than the first year. We were working on certain diseases and how the drugs worked on them. And we were doing trials on rats and how they react to different drugs. I was working on disease such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson, and what drugs are there to treat them. Unfortunately, we don't have any drugs yet, but there are certain drugs that they can slow down the process of the damaging the neurons in human's brain.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You mentioned Alzheimer's and Parkinson's because, firstly, diagnosing those two diseases can be quite tough as well. There's a lot of I was discussing this a little bit a few shows ago. There's a lot of ignorance in terms of Alzheimer's specifically. People then think that okay, memory loss is just a part of growing old, where it actually isn't. There's a recent person I spoke to, a consultant radiologist, who said that he can show me images of a 90-year-old's brain who has a 20-year-old brain structure, and he could show a person's brain who is 30 in their late 30s and they have a 90-year-old brain. So age is not a factor in terms of memory loss, and people need to kind of recognize that. So I completely agree with you, and there needs to be obviously more work done in terms of finding a treatment for it.
That's very true. Unfortunately, we are lacking focusing at the moment on such disease, but by 2020 it can be a big problem in our community.
Mm-hmm. And there is people who are trying to, like this consultant radiologist that I spoke to, there are people who are trying to change that, because dementia, Alzheimer's, these are all still diseases from which people die, but just because they don't have the word cancer in them, or they don't have what other words are talked a lot about. Well, cancer, I guess, is the main one. Cancer is funded by so much focus on cancer, trying to find a treatment for it. Billions of money go on it. However, when it comes to dementia, from which people die, not to the exact same levels, but still a lot of people are affected with it. Not just the person who is affected, but also their families. So there definitely needs to be more focus on that within the UK, but also in the other countries. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned this disease, because just not this, also depression, the topic of today, it's also sort of disease that a lot of people tend to ignore. They say, oh, just get better, it's nothing. So people have that image that depression isn't actually a disease, it's just something else, it's just a person's mood. So could you tell us a little bit about what depression actually is?
That is the main problem in our community, that they don't realize how tough depression can get and how dangerous it is. I'll be talking about what depression is today, why is so important that we are talking about it here, and how we can improve it. So depression, basically, let me start from mental well-being, what mental well-being is. Mental well-being involves both physical and both body and mind. So you have it describes your mental states to on a daily day-to-day basis, and how you cope with things and how you feel about things on a day-to-day basis. It is changeable depending on your circumstances. So the reason it's important that When we've come to learn that better mental health means better life. So if someone has a good mental health, they feel good about themselves, as well as they cope well with stress, and they also build a positive relationship with their loved ones who are around them. And having good mental health, it means is closely linked with a person's mood. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an important topic we'll be going through. So,
all right, that sounds absolutely fascinating. You mentioned that you were part of an organization who was deeply involved in this. Could you tell us a bit more about that organization as well?
I'm currently working for Selfless. It's an NHS-funded charity. What they do is they increase awareness of such disease, depression, anxiety, mental well-being across London communities. So we do a lot of workshops. We deliver a lot of presentations and to increase awareness. We are targeting mainly the vulnerable populations and the people with, as you said, that above 40, about 50, that age, mm-hmm. and they need to realize that how tough it can be to have a depression. And the main thing is that people do realize that they have depression, but they don't do anything about it, which is why we come in. Yeah. We say, like, okay, you have a depression, there's no point to worry about. Now who is there to help you, what is there to help you, and what you can do to yourself to come out of these problems and overcome such diseases.
And I've just been informed that we have received a call. I'm not sure whether they're still there. We'll just quickly take this call and we'll move back to discussion. So let's see who's calling us and from where and what are their thoughts on the topics of today. Hello.
Hi, I'm calling again and sorry to interrupt you guys while Omejong was explaining about depression and how it's dealt in our community, mainly with Afghans. How can we overcome this situation and be more open about it and discuss with others when we feeling down instead of being closed or in denial mode? And as well, has he ever touched this issue with Afghan community, and what would be the response if he would go and say, like, I want to do a project like on mental health and mental health well-being and so on? So how would he work around that? Thank you.
Thank you for your call, and we'll hear Omejong's thoughts on this.
Thank you so much. Great question. Unfortunately, in Afghan community, having depression is very light. They take it very light, but it's a very serious issue. I do have a few projects for Afghan communities here, but I was waiting for Ramadan. As soon as Ramadan finishes, I'll deliver a few workshops. And I'll be mainly targeting the older community and Afghan society. The problem with the mentality, it will take time for them to realize that's how hard it is. The person who is going through depression, it is actually a normal disease, such as you said before, a cancer. It is the same as a headache, is the same as other diseases. So they need to take this serious. They need to go there and ask for help. Who's there to help them? Who's there to support them? And as well as what they can do for themselves to overcome such problems. We will talk about this as we go along.
That's really good that you mentioned that, because there is firstly a lack of these kind of workshops where people could come and discuss to you. This is sort of increasing in numbers for depression within the UK society. I've noticed that through the past few years. People are trying to change that, and they are trying to make it more aware that depression is a disease and people need to focus on it in terms of finding ways and to help the patients.
If we're going to talk about statistics here, 1 out of 4 people in the UK, they are struggling from mental health problems. The most common one is, as we said, is depression and anxiety, and women are more likely to get treated than men. And in 2010, about 5,700 people, they committed suicide, following by having depression. And also suicide remains the highest killer under the age of 35 in men who are going through depression. However, the good thing is that there is help available if someone knows where to go, and that's why we comes in and we tell them, trying to guide them to where to go to help and how can they improve themselves. We also, as you said before, what low mood is. Low mood is basically, most people, they experience up and downs in life, but they can feel unhappy, but sometimes this unhappiness, this sadness, they get them really deeply, and that's when stress and anxiety comes in. And there can be a lot of different reasons for this. It can be financial problems, it can be employability, as well as physical illness, pain, relationship problems. Poor sleeps can be a great cause here, as well as the lack of hormones in the body. So these are one of those few of those problems that can lead to low mood and depression, anxiety.
Just one thing that the caller briefly mentioned was the fact that how do we get people to talk about these issues. It is tough. People have that ego inside them that if they go to someone else and say that I'm not feeling well or I have depression, other people tend to judge them as being weak. And this sort of mentality needs change, specifically in the Afghan community, but also in the Western community as well. And that's one of the reasons why people are afraid to come out there and talk about this, which leads to, obviously, if you don't talk about it, then it leads to further complications, further problems, and could eventually lead to suicide. So is there any ways that you would have advice in terms of how people could take away this ego out of the way, this big wall that people have in front of them, and just talk to another person, or either family members, friends, if those two aren't good enough, to your GP, who will keep everything confidential, obviously, but will offer you that help? How do we encourage people to go about this?
A lot of people, as you said, ego is a problem, and we are still working on this, how to find an efficient way to overcome this. But the main thing they worry about is the confidentiality. But at the end of every workshop, we do tell them, we do give them that extra confidence that whoever you spoke to, at the end of the day, the information is going to be safe. Mm-hmm. No one will know, even your family members, they won't know, but you need to go out there, speak to them.
Yeah.
If they can guarantee that the information that you go there for help, those information will be secure. No one will know, not your own parents, your loved ones, mm-hmm. No one will know. The confidentiality is there. I can assure you that whoever wants to go and check for depression, anxiety, low mood, you know, if they have some diagnosis, the one we're going to go through symptoms, that they can go and check them, these diagnoses, and to see if they have depression. And it's the word, that confidentiality, is important, especially we live in the UK. It is a great cause. For in medical field, everything is safe and secure. So the only thing that I can tell them, that it is important that they need to go and check.
Yeah.
But as well as, it will be secure, and they don't need to worry about any privacy issues.
Right. That's very great to hear. And I think the second problem with that would be is that where would people find this help? Because I think if they don't have the information where they could seek help, it might make it tough for them to seek help, if you know what I mean. So is there any advice that you'd have to our listeners, that where could they seek help from?
There are a lot of different ways that they can follow to get help. There are a lot of charities who work for depression and low mood, as well as if it's something urgent, they can call 999 or 111. They can go to the local A&E department, as well as there are a lot of Samaritans that they are there to help them. The service is 24 hours, it's free, and it's confidential support for people experiencing such disorders. As well as if you go to GP, there are a lot of different therapies, medications they can give you, prescribe some drugs for you. There are a lot of talking therapies, which is really helping lately, as well as there's social support advices and referral to mental health services. And so the best thing is that to go and speak to your local GP, as well as there are a lot of charities who are working, such as Mind and a few others, that they're there. And I would say to the people that these people, they get paid for this, so why don't you just go and seek help from them? Mm-hmm. They're there for a reason. So if you think that you're going through such problems, why don't you go and speak to them? Not just medications, there are a lot of talking therapies, which is, as I said, it's really helping lately. And sometime that sharing your concerns with others will, without worrying about being judged or privacy problems, confidentiality, you can actually talk to them freely, whatever you have in your heart, mm-hmm. in your mind, and it's a lot of time, it's really helpful, as well as the social support advices. So a lot of people, they struggle, as we said, the problems can be, you know, it can be due to financial problem, it can be due to employability, it can be due to physical pain and other problems. So if you have a problem, suppose if a person has employability problems, they can go and speak to the social support advice bureau. They can they can help them, so they can find them a job, they can give support them to financially. So if the problem is solved, they are out of the depression. So the main thing is you just need to go out there and speak to someone, and the service is available, the help is there, you just need to go out and find it.
That makes absolutely sense. Now, we'll take a quick break, just so our guest has a bit of time to take a breath in, and we'll be shortly back and discuss about how specifically depression and mental well-being could affect you physically, as well as have social aspect problems as well. We'll discuss a little bit more in detail about depression and the signs and where you could find further help from. We have touched upon this quickly, but we'll discuss a bit more in detail. We'll also discuss a little bit about what depression is in even more detail than we have so far, and talk a little bit more about treatment options out there. So we'll take a short break and we'll come back in a couple of minutes.
چشم سرنایی نگاهی مستی دل از کفتم ندی بنازم در نشه چشم فتانم شرد از قلب زار بیمان بیفزون قشنگتر از دریاست دختری دریا 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 گیری تو دردم فدایی زلف شب گیری تو دردم بنام هی سیاه یا کوتا مرجا شاناخ روزن گیری تو دردم قشنگتر از دریاست دختری دریا 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 در خیره باشم مدام در پیش تو آینه باشم مرا سنجیه گر دنی خود بکن دهی با دل گهی بسینه باشم قشنگتر از دریاست دختری دریا قشنگتر از دریاست دختری دریا قشنگتر از دریاست دختری دریا
Welcome back, guys, to Inside Health. We have a special guest today, Omid Saeed John, who's the London Health Ambassador, and we have been discussing so far about depression, mental well-being, and ways that you could get help from. Just briefly, Omid John, could you briefly discuss in a scientific matter, what does depression mean? What happens in our brains? Why do we feel depressed?
As we said before, there are some hormones in our body. If we are lacking them, then it can cause us depression. Two of them are, it's called serotonin and noradrenaline. They're two neurotransmitters that if the body is lacking, person can get a depression.
Yeah. All right. Now, in terms of how would depression... I know it's something which affects people's life quite massively, not just their lives, their family's life. What are the effects the depression could have on a person in a psychological level?
Before I come to that point, let me rephrase. Things can be complicated. Before depression, there is the first step is that low mood, and low moods can affect people in a lot of different ways. The psychological problems is that we think and feel down. Suppose if there is a problem, let me take it as light problem as it is. Suppose a person misses the bus.
Yeah.
They go to work, they miss the bus. They get angry, they get frustrated. Normally, it's a simple thing. You would say, okay, that's fine. I will take another bus, and you know they do get frustrated, but they can cope with it. But this little problem that they think that, oh, I miss my bus, and it can lead to a lot of problems. That little thinking negative and that feeling down can lead to a lot of problems. So you feel sad, you feel hopeless for the future, you feel guilty, like, okay, why you missed your bus. It's irritable as well, and you worried about things all the time. So this becomes your habit, and once this this psychological problem becomes your habit, this can lead to a lot of other things, such as physical problems. You can have a pain, you can have headache, your body is aching, other problems, sleeping problems, you are not engaging well with your family, your loved ones, your relationship is going down, you feel tired most of the time, and the anxiety is there, you don't even eat. Sometime I was learning this workshop, and this great lady, she said, sometime you eat a lot. So eating a lot or losing appetite can be one of the symptoms that physically you can see a person is going to depression. So yeah, there are a lot of other problems, such as digestive problems. Mm-hmm. It can be diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, constipation, and you have loss of interest and things around the family. So yeah. These are the physical aspect that you can see from all the psychological problems, from which you lost confidence. Mm-hmm. There's no motivation, you don't enjoy things anymore, you don't go to that extra mile to fulfill your hobbies, you just do your normal work, like 9-to-5 job, and then go home, sleep, and then again tomorrow. So you don't do that extra work to fulfill your hobbies. So the as well as most importantly, all these psychological problems, they lead to your ability to make decisions in life, which can be frustrating at some point. So psychological problems leads to physical problems. Mm-hmm. As we said, that the most important one is the sleeping problems that a lot of youngsters facing nowadays. And this physical problems, this leads to more bigger issue, such as social problems. Social problems, it can affect in different ways. You don't do well at work, you're struggling mm-hmm. to keep up with your deadlines, you're having difficulties in your relationship, you're avoiding contact with your friends and family, you're isolating yourself, you just lock in a room, you don't want to talk to anyone, you don't want to express what you feel, you just don't want to talk, you're just withdrawing yourself from, and as well as you're neglecting your hobbies and your interests. Now, the important thing is that there is help available. You can actually stop the whole process of going to, you know, psychological problems are really You know, it's a great deal. So you don't do good at work. You're struggling with your family. You find it difficult to cope with your daily life.
Mm-hmm.
But if I repeat myself here, if I repeat myself, the whole thing started from that one little upside down thing. You know, in life we do feel upside down. It's just that sometimes you feel good, sometimes you feel bad. But the important thing is that the good people, or I would say the healthy people, they know how to deal with them.
Yeah.
You know, problems can be there always, but it's how we deal with it. So if a person would have dealt with that problem in a nice way, or coped with that problem, he wouldn't have led to physical problems and then led to social problems. So the whole problem would be solved.
Yeah.
So now here are some, we were going to go through some process.
Before we move on to things that a person can do to improve on those aspects, may I just ask, what is the best point in your opinion where a person should seek help or seek advice from a GP or talk to a person? Because I believe there are different levels of depression. So you could have a mild one, which might go away. You could have a severe one. So at what stage, what is the point where a person could go to a GP and be like, I'm feeling down, what should I do?
Okay, so we said there are three phases: a psychological phase, physical phase, and social phase. Psychological phase is basically is a self-initiated phase.
Mm-hmm.
So the main important thing is that if you can cope, it won't lead to those three phases. So now you didn't do well, you didn't dealt with the problem really well, you can't cope with it, then that's when it leads to second stage that you can see physical. As you say, a physical stage that you can't sleep well, you have pain, you have other problems. Now that's the stage where you can, you know, you realize that, you know, I'm going through depression and I need to speak to someone and I need to seek help. Sometime, at least, you know, some people, they're struggling socially. That's when most of the time, at the moment in our community, that's when the actual stage that people go through to see someone. They can speak to GP anytime, even though the healthy person can go and speak to their GP if they're going to any such problems. So there's no any specific time or any specific stage that you can go through. It can be, if it's very emergency, they can go through, as we said before, they can go through direct A&E department, and they can treat themselves through that way. But normally they can just consultate with their GP, they can talk to them, and they can take it from there.
Now, prior to moving on in terms of what a person can do to if they have depression, are there any preventative methods that you can think of that person could do on their daily lives which would sort of make them safe from getting depression?
Well,
so to avoid depression, what are some preventive methods that a person can take?
Great question. I've been asked this question before as well. The main thing is that, as we said, that we do face problems on our daily life. The important thing is that we should learn how to cope with them. You know, if someone has a problem, it is just, you can't do anything. The problem is there. It's better to go out there, solve it, rather than, you know, sitting at home in your room and like mourning about and crying like, oh, what's going to happen? So the best thing is that to learn how to cope with these things. But there are some self initiative that you can do to not even go that way. The main important thing is that you need to learn how to cope with problems. And for coping with problems, there are some points that I will point out later on today that they can improve on those, and they will have a good sense of decision-making ability, as well as they will know how to cope with problems.
Mm-hmm. Shall we start with those mechanisms, or how could a person cope with a problem? Could we get some advice from you in terms of what a person, if I had depression, what would be the steps that I would need to take?
Definitely, we should start on that. As we said, there are different pathways available to help a person. Suppose we said that what is there for us, they can go to GP, they can speak to a lot of charities that are there to help them, and they can go to talking therapy. But most importantly, what a person can do for himself or herself to overcome such problems. There are five steps that I always talk about. One is sleeping better, sleep problems. Then the second point out core is food, diet. Mm-hmm. What do you eat? What you don't eat. These are the one of the main important problem that important point that can affect your mental health. Get active. A lot of people, they're not active. They don't do exercise. So get active would be my third point, as well as connect more. A lot of people, they're too busy with their daily life. They don't see their kids. They don't see their friends, family. They're too busy with their 9-to-5 jobs. And I would say, you know, my fourth point that I will talk more about is connect more. Mm-hmm. And the last one, but not least, is learn to relax and how to cope with it. A lot of the people, they tell me like, okay, fine, I came across this problem, now what should I do? You just need to calm down. It's not a great deal. So learn to relax. That would be my fifth mm-hmm. point that I would cover.
In terms of sleep, now this is a problem that I think the young generation as well as the old generation is facing nowadays. And I think that's probably due to the advancement in technology, them having iPads and iPhones and everything in their hands, which might be one of the reasons why they don't get enough sleep. But is there any ways that they could improve that? And is there any advice you could give on how a person could improve their sleep, which is one of the steps to prevent from getting depression?
Of course there is. Sleeping problem is very common, especially with, as you said, the young generation. You would be surprised by the statistics. 1 out of 3 people in the UK, they are struggling with sleep and they have sleeping problems. This could be, when we say sleep problems, this could be struggling to sleep, getting to sleep, as well as waking up too early at night, or as well as, you know, they don't have a set time. Mm-hmm. One day they sleep at 10, the next day they sleep at 1 a.m. in the morning. So they don't have that set timing. Let me conclude everything in one sentence. Poor sleep basically means bad mood, and bad mood is basically you're affected psychologically. You're going to go to physical problems, and physicals will go to the social problems. So if we can improve sleep, the question that comes in, okay, fine, I have a sleeping problem, like what should I do now? How can I improve my sleeping problems? There are a few points that I'll discuss today here. The most important one is that don't take naps. Like during daytime, I know a lot of people, they sleep here and there for 5-10 minutes, but when it comes to the actual time to sleep, that's when they struggle to sleep. Mm-hmm. But you've already slept for 2-3 hours, so how are you going to sleep now? So don't take naps. During the day, do your work, do exercise, meet with people, stay with your family. Reduce caffeine intake. Like a lot of people, they do take coffees. Mm-hmm. Reduce that, don't drink it, especially mm-hmm. when you're going to go to sleep late at night. Exercise during daytime. Do exercise. It's important. Like personal experience, whenever I do exercise, man, the sleep that I get is just amazing. Bedtime routine. As I said before, a lot of people, they're struggling to have that set timing to sleep. If we're gonna have a good sleep, if you're gonna overcome this problem, we need to have that set timing, like 10.
Now we have just received a little message from one of our audiences. Do you get depressed at any age? Is it age related disease, or is it something which can affect anyone of any age?
The depression, it can be, when we say depression, there are different causes. The first one is that the lack of the neurotransmitters, as we said, and mm-hmm. that can be from a very early age. If a baby is born and they're lacking those neurotransmitters in the body, suppose if a person is lacking the serotonin 5-HT neurotransmitter and norepinephrine in the body, then they will be going through depression, as well as the genetic problems. The scientists have proved that depression has genetic problems. If a person's in the family tree, if their granddad, their parents, mm-hmm. they're going through depression, sometime it does pass on to their kids. Mm-hmm. The third one, which is the most important one, is that a lot of people say that growing up and in an environment where a child is getting abused, where a child is subjected to a bad environment, that can lead to depression from a very early age. But normally, you know, there is no set timing in life that I've met people there who's going through depression from as early as age 10 or as late as 90s. Mm-hmm. So there's no set.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, it's completely fine. That was a great question. Like, okay, so improving sleep. We said that the bedtime routine, we should have that, as well as don't lie in bed and feeling anxious. Like a lot mm-hmm. of people, when they go to bed, they just think about things like, okay, what they're gonna do. Yeah, the easy way to stop thinking while you're in the bed is to make notes of the things you're worrying about, or to make things note of the things you are especially myself, I do a lot of thinking when I go to sleep, like what am I going to do tomorrow, I need to speak to this guy, I need mm-hmm. to do this, I need to do this. If I make a list of these things to do tomorrow, then my brain is free, I can easily sleep. So the best thing is to have that list ready.
That's a brilliant idea. I'd never thought of that. What I usually do is count sheep, and that works for me. That takes my mind off things. That's a brilliant way of looking at things.
Just make a list of things to do tomorrow, and then it should be fine. A lot of people, alhamdulillah, we're Muslims, we don't drink alcohol, but for the other community, when I do deliver workshops, I tell them that not to drink alcohol. Or smoking mm-hmm. Can be harmful before you sleep.
Yeah.
So
one thing that the majority of people might not know is that alcohol is actually an antidepressant.
Depressant.
So yeah, when people, it's quite funny that a lot of people, when they're depressed, they take alcohol and they think that's going to make them feel better, whereas in fact it has the complete opposite effect. So I completely agree with you on that, that people should avoid.
Yeah, the next point that I would like to point out is avoid watching TV or having iPad, phone an hour early than your bedtime. A lot of people, especially the youngsters, when they go to bed, they just take their phone with them. They are on social media, and then they complain for not sleeping. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is that you have your iPad or iPhone or phones in your hands, and your brain is thinking that, you know, it's a daytime, the light is reflecting, so there's, you're far away from sleep. So yeah, the important thing is to avoid watching TV mm-hmm. or having working on iPad or phone.
Another funny thing that I noticed recently, because I've been traveling so much lately and staying in so many hotels, none of them have a phone charger next to the bed. And I asked one of the receptions once that why isn't there a plug that I could plug my phone next to my bed. They said that, do you want a good night's sleep? I said, yes, of course. They said, that's why we don't have the charger next to the bed. And I think that's quite well. And there's also another saying by Benjamin Franklin, which goes, early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise, which I completely agree with. So sleep has a major effect in a person's mood.
So the simple advice I would give to the audience now is that to sleep in a dark room, just have that separate room. Don't while you're sleeping, just turn off your lights. Mm. Sometimes a lot of people use eye masks. It's really helpful. It's going to help you sleep well. And something else that especially Afghans are struggling with that I've known is that keep your sleeping place just for sleeping. Avoid using it for other activities. So if you know, in that bed, just keep it separate, just don't do anything. When you want to sleep, that's when you go and sleep. It will help you. So that was the important step if a person has a good sleep, they won't go through low mood. Low mood won't happen. It won't lead to depression and other problems. The second point that I want to talk about is diet. It is really important what you eat and what you don't eat. Mm-hmm. So the researchers are looking at them to find the link between the food and the mood, and they're still working on them. There's no evidence that they specifically support certain hypotheses, but there's always good to have healthy food in your daily routine. So the healthy food would be just to take a lot of fruits and vegetables and protein in every meal. Avoid a lot of these frozen foods. So yeah, diet is an important one, to as well as the water. A lot of people are struggling not to drink water, but I would suggest that drinking water, drinking a lot of fluids can be helpful for the body. The next point that I wanted to point out was the exercise. As I said before, exercise is really good. As I personally, I do a lot of exercise, and whenever I'm depressed, I'm going through, like, you know, I'm stressed out about something, I just go to the gym, workout, and so it reduces the stress, it improves self-esteem, it gives you that confidence, it gives you that motivation. So as well as when you exercise, it also improves your sleeping pattern. Improves your sleep. It gives you a sense of achievements and controlling. Improves your weight, as well as it boosts your energy level. It reduces the risk of heart attack, which is the common disease and nowadays. The next point I would like to cover, just two more points. The get active. Get active is another point. Like, a lot of we have 24 hours in a day, but if we separate that one or half an hour just to do that extra activity, or go and see your relatives, go and speak to someone. We have a lot of things going on in our community. There are a lot of skydiving activities, swimming, cycling, as well as there's a lot of, you find it, a lot of people find it funny. I've been to laughing yoga. It's really nice, and the people are there just amazing, and it's really helping. Scientists they're now working on it, so how to the connection between laughing yoga and they basically work better than antidepressant if you go through these five steps that if you follow them. The last but not least one is that get active, connect to people, speak to your relatives. They're there to support you. A lot of people, when they go through such problems, the disease, they just keep themselves isolated. They don't want to speak to anyone. They don't want to tell anybody what's going on. So the important thing is that, you know, it's not, there's no secret by spending time with your, it's just as simple as this. Try to speak to your friends, your family, your loved ones, even if you're busy. I know life is busy here, but if you can find that one call, time for that one call, it can be really make a huge difference in someone's life. So yeah.
Just one final question from our audience. We have a couple of more minutes. This is something I personally noticed in a couple of people who have been doing this. There's a lot of media out there which shows people being beheaded, or there's a lot of war videos, there are a lot of sort of these bad kind of things. Could these potentially have a negative effect on a person's mood, and would they eventually lead to become depressed as a result of it?
Yes, there is always some psychological effects behind these. It makes you feel depressed. It makes you feel you lose interest in living. It reduces your self-esteem. Then, you know, these five words, the three words that I just told you, this can lead to physical problems. If you have less self-esteem, if you're struggling with your confidence, if you're struggling to motivate yourself, if you're struggling to initiate something, if you're struggling to go that extra mile to fulfill your hobbies, then it will lead to physical problems, and physical problems will see in your social problems. You will be struggling to live. There is always an effect on
these negative videos, or negative as I emphasize, they could potentially be quite harmful for a person, because we are used to having an idea about the world that this is a safe world and this is our, we are in our comfort zone. But when you see something tragic, something so wrong that you had never been used to, I can imagine what kind of impact it would have on a person's like mental well-being. It could damage them quite a lot, especially if they haven't seen those kind of vivid images before. So one final thing that I'd like to let the audience know is that make sure that your kids don't watch violent movies, because there's a lot of research out there which shows that if kids are exposed to those kind of images, it might be very harmful for them in the long run, which is why they have a age limit that they say that this is the age limit that you should, if you're of this age, then you can watch it, but if you aren't, then you can't watch it.
Yeah.
But Omidjan, I'd like to thank you very much. I know our session got quite short because we had a lot to talk about. Thank you very much for traveling all the way here to join us and have this interesting discussion about depression and mental well-being and all your expertise around the topic. Thank you once again for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Thank Do you have any final notes or anything else that you want to let our listeners know?
The important thing that I would just deliver in my last message is learn to relax. I mean, stress is a part of everyday life, but a lot of stress can make us unhappy. And learning to relax and is a very important step in the improving of mental well-being. So learn to relax and just take it easy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, one final thing that I would like to say is that I made a quick acronym in my head, which is SEAS, and it basically stands for sleep, eat, healthy exercise, and last one was socialize. So SEAS, that's your tip in terms of preventing yourself from getting depression, as well as if you have depression, that's what will help you to lower your symptoms. So thank you guys once again for listening and tuning in. This was the show for today, and we'll speak to you guys next week. Thank you and goodbye.